fucking modern man, we have to face the fact that modern man suffers from a kind of poverty.
Toptainment Radio, worldwide sound. Toptainmentradio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay.
Radio, the way it should be heard.
You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest, and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. We go where you go. The world's greatest radio. You're in touch with faith and family. Our mission is to share uplifting information that supports families in living more abundant lives. And I'm Reverend Dr. Carolyn Pettigrew, and this is Radio the Way It Should Be Heard.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm a guest host for Dr. Pettigrew. I'm Judge Grady Pettigrew, and I'm, as I said, hosting today on our show, which is focused on 2020 census. So we're going to provide some information that each and every one of you needs to know about the census, and certainly the requirements related to it, as well as how to comply with those requirements. Today, we're pleased to have guests in the studio who represent two very important organizations that are going to support an event focusing on the 2020 census. So we're pleased to have the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio and the Association of American Retired Persons, the AERP, who are both in studio. And I would like to ask that you identify yourselves for our listeners.
Thank you. My name is Ernestine Jackson. I am a regional volunteer lead with AARP Ohio, focusing on Central Ohio, and I am also a council member of the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Karen Dawson. I'm a representative on the council of the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio and serving as president at this time. And just quickly, the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio is made up of 9 faith traditions, Baha'is, Buddhists, Christian, Hindu, Islam, Jain, Jewish, Sikh, and Unitarian Universalists. So as you could tell, it's a very broad-based, inclusive organization that's a nonprofit, and it's been in existence since 1985.
Obviously, with the name or the title, it's an indication that not only are you representing these various groups, but you're trying to reach out to broader members of our community. Is that?
That's completely true. Yes. Okay. Everyone is welcome in, and so we have programming and so on that there is no, you don't have to be a member of one of those 9 faith traditions in order to participate or become a member of the organization.
Well, Columbus has been a welcoming community for many, many faith communities. Many, many years ago, Vietnamese and Cambodians came here with a broad help in after the end of the war. Mm-hmm. More recently, we've seen the Somali and mm-hmm. obviously the Nepalese, there are many
Ethiopians.
So it's a broad range of people, and obviously these faith traditions incorporate many of those people and their culture as well as their faith community. I guess because AARP is much more well known, we don't have to spend as much time identifying the organization. I got my card mm-hmm. at whatever, what is it, 55?
At 50.
50, okay. Yes. I got my card, and I have my membership card in my wallet right now. The thing I wanted to ask is, why have the Interfaith Commission and committee and AARP partnered in this effort related to 2020 census?
Well, I guess to begin with, we were asked, and Ernestine does serve in a leadership role on the Interfaith Association Central Ohio. We call it ICO, I-A-C-O, as well as being very active and involved with the AARP. In reaching out to us, we basically looked at the fact that one of our principles is peace and respecting the dignity of individuals. And we have a social action committee that looks at issues that are of interest to, to help promote peace and justice in our community. And we see having a full census as being a justice issue, that in fact we want to be sure we count everyone and that we have a full number for Ohio, because funding coming to Ohio affects all these people's lives.
So for AARP, our reach to the Interfaith Association, it's because as a civic social engagement organization, we are concerned about, or we are, it's important to partner with organizations based on our focus for a particular issue. For this particular issue, it's not just the 50 plus, which AARP represents, but people of faith, because we believe that the faith leaders as such still have the ear of what we consider the hard-to-count population, which is part of the reason we are being so active this time in the census. Without a complete count for the state of Ohio, we are at risk not just of losing funding, but losing representation in Congress, and not being able to continue to develop this community in a way that's beneficial for all of its residents.
Well, obviously, you've taken on a task. The 2020 census is such a broad responsibility that the more partners you have, the better.
The better.
And I'm sure you've chosen well. I understand that Sensitive to the Calendar is an upcoming event on March 19th, 2020. That'll be from 9 to 11 on that day. And I have the note that it's at the Lincoln Ballroom here in Columbus, Ohio.
Correct. We are hosting jointly a breakfast for what we call faith leaders. We suggest that you think about the term faith leaders broadly, mm-hmm. In order to encourage and provide information for what will follow on March 27th, 28th, and 29th as Faith Weekend, to continue to promote complete support and a complete count for the census. The breakfast is free. Breakfast will be available starting at 8:30. It is in the Lincoln Theater Ballroom. We will have security for those that are concerned about that. And there is plenty of parking on the grounds across the street and at the church lot around the corner from the Lincoln Theater. So we expect to be able to very comfortably accommodate anyone that has chosen to attend that event. We will also have people at each table to help facilitate discussion about what is and is not heard, and we will have someone from the Census Bureau to do a full, complete information sharing about all of the aspects of the census that people may not be familiar with but need to know.
So I guess from my work with community groups, this first point that you made was that it's free.
Correct.
It's a breakfast and it's free.
It's free.
I say that because there are many, many people that when you talk about going in and getting a meal, that can be a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
The second thing is that you said faith leaders. And in many communities, that is not simply clergy.
That's correct.
That can be elders. It could It can be in the Native American community. It could be a medicine man. There are a number of people who qualify as faith leaders.
And that's why we want people to think broadly when using that term. It is a typical term to put out there.
Yeah.
But in today's environment, you need to explain almost everything. So, again, we really hope that people will think broadly. Faith leaders may well be just organizational board members for organizations like the Interfaith Association or others.
Yeah. Just to add to that, I sent the flyer and information to a broad array of people who I know and I know are involved in the community. And that might be involved with immigrants. It might be involved with the elderly. It might be involved with special populations. It might be involved with some of the cultural or nationalities that live in the central Ohio. So it was going to those people who know people that we want to be sure get counted. And as I think all of us know, sometimes it's not only the message, but it's the messenger.
Sure.
And so trying to get people to this breakfast where we're hearing the same information, we get to ask questions, we get to talk with other people who are also involved in this effort, we think will be very helpful to then go out and reach people that any one of us may not have access to.
Well, go ahead.
I was just about to say, it's also important to know that the Interfaith Association and AARP both have resources that we can make available to those who show up that want to go further with their particular constituency or community. So there's written material, there some maybe some limited financial support for their efforts to reach into their community. It's just important that they first get the correct information to be able to deliver it in an encouraging manner.
Well, I know that there are at least two categories of people who deal with the cultural portion of the faith development. Mm-hmm. Both artists, there are dancers mm-hmm. that come under a certain culture, and students. Mm-hmm. Some of that is language teachers. We have a large cadre of translators in Columbus because when people seek medical care, they will end up having translators, depending on their facility. Sometimes it's by phone, but many times it's in person.
Correct.
And those people could be very key to that type of development. I would like to back up a bit. You mentioned the Faith Weekend of March 27th, 28th, and 29th. What is that?
So even the Census Bureau recognizes the value of the faith community in getting a complete count. And so the Faith Weekend is a specific focus from the Census Bureau to, again, encourage a complete count. And they defined that particular weekend as Faith Weekend. The Census Bureau did. So,
and I think part of that's because April 1st is a special date.
It's the count date.
That's the start of the count date?
Yes.
Okay.
So we've already heard the questions, well, you know, someone's only a part-time student or only in the community for a limited amount of time, maybe a couple months, and will be leaving. Or not a citizen, or not whatever. Mm-hmm. What is important is who is here on April the 1st.
Correct.
That's why that's a critical. Okay. And so they could be leaving the next day, but they're here on April 1st.
Now, this may be incorrect. I heard that there's only a 6-week period for responding to the census.
No, it's much larger than that.
Okay.
So the count date is April 1st. And before April 1st, I think starting March 12th, which is tomorrow, you may receive notice or an invitation to be prepared for the count. And then the actual count day, they hope you will fill out the paperwork on April 1st. If people do not respond, then there is a second letter. And then maybe 2 weeks later, there is a postcard. And then finally, there are what's called numerators. hired by the Census Bureau that will go to your door. What people should know about that is those people have special identification. And before you start to engage with them, you should ask for their ID. And you can also call a number to make sure that what you see and the number on that ID is in fact legitimate. They are not to come into your home. The questions are not that long or extensive. They are to engage you at your door with an iPad where the information will go on. And that brings another point. This is the first time the census has been online. So there's nervousness about that. And another reason why there's concern about the hard to count. They assume that older adults, I'm smiling with this, do not use computers, do not know how to use computers. And that is true of some people, even if they're not older adults. But it is not true of all older adults. So there is a lot of concern about getting people to a comfort level with responding online.
I've had some neighbors who are close in age who are proud of their grandchildren who facilitate their internet activity. And I'm saying, and they're proud of saying, oh no, I don't use a computer, but my granddaughter does. And I said, well, nobody does banking anymore without, well, you know those.
I do.
What is the last date for compliance with this requirement?
I believe that, and I should have looked this up, that the census efforts will continue through July. So they are not going to give up. There is a
but
real design.
Extended by virtue of somebody not complying.
Correct. That is correct.
There's additional time to go into these other
That is
efforts.
Correct.
Okay.
And the question will probably still be asked as of April 1st.
Yes, I understand. Yeah.
Who was in your home? who lived in this home, rather?
Well, one of the things that is important is that this really is a legal requirement.
Correct.
There are a lot of conversations about the U.S. Constitution, but as in the material that I have here, Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution requires
it.
A census count every 10 years.
That's correct.
And it's done by a nonpartisan government agency.
That's correct.
So the things we saw in the news about the citizenship question and all that ended up going before courts that said that's not a part.
Right.
Proper
that is
part
correct.
Of it.
It was not included.
It's
that's
not
right.
included. Okay. And this agency is not one of these that's subject to orders that just simply fires people.
That is correct.
They're about doing their work.
That is correct.
All right.
And they don't share the information. That's really
Thank
important.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't share it.
So in a time when we know that data banks are connected and people can get all kinds of information
right.
from the first source.
Yes.
Social media is one of the examples. Yes. Okay.
So what the census does is provide a statistical picture, not a detailed individual picture. And those statistical pictures are really very revealing. I don't think people quite understand that. If you want to know how to set up kindergarten 5 years from now, you need to know how many children were born in this particular year. And that's a very simple one. I mean, you know.
Well, a lot of people don't know that many fast food restaurants are placed on the basis of the census report, not based on any other market study.
That's true.
How many people are there? And unfortunately, people don't realize that one of the things in terms of primary stores, the stores that you really want to shop
right.
at, it's based on the census. How much money do the people
That's
make?
That's exactly right.
And if they don't make the money, they don't put a store there.
That's right.
They certainly don't build a shopping center like an Easton that we have here. They just won't put it there. And, okay, this is for U.S. Residents.
Correct.
But that you said it's not just citizens, but it also includes the 50 states, the District of Columbia, the U.S. territories, which
Correct.
Includes Puerto Rico, American Samoa, the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's right.
So it's where the U.S. is by virtue of statehood or territorial jurisdiction.
Yes, right. Yes.
And those are all people who are to be included in the census count.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And of course, there will eventually be the report of what that statistical.
That's right.
Okay. The access note that I have here is that this is online,
yes,
by phone, or by mail.
Yes.
So basically, anybody who needs it can have access.
That's
to it.
Right.
Okay.
But it is the first one, primarily online.
That's
always
the,
before it's been paper.
That's the preferred.
That is the preferred method
of being counted.
Right.
Okay. And what you're also saying is that I can make sure there's less wear and tear on me if I go ahead and do it online.
That's right.
As opposed to having down to the
having
the
people
level
track
of
you
the,
down.
Yeah, yes.
You know, as you suggested about the you know, the granddaughter who knows how to use a computer, but I don't. I think we want people to think creatively and with some realizing, again, the range of populations that might have difficulty filling it out. So libraries, for example, will be available. So people go to the library, their neighborhood library, and fill it out. And there'll be people in the libraries to help.
Okay.
People who work with communities of various again, nationalities or faiths or languages could bring together people and have a potluck.
Sure.
And people could fill it out. So it's trying to reach people, which is why I think, you know, that expression, one shoe doesn't fit all. So there may be different strategies to use. And I think one of the things we want to talk about at the breakfast is maybe some of those strategies to help people think creatively about how do we get together with our neighbor and help them to fill out the form.
And obviously helping them, there's this major component, and that is this trust issue.
Yes.
Because I've even heard from people who have no citizenship issue.
They, right.
I mean, they're born here, they're military veterans, they have all, but they're still concerned because of kind of craziness that's going on in Washington right now.
And afraid that the government is going to know more about them than they want to be known.
And this is close.
That's unfortunate.
It's also close to tax season.
Yes. Very true.
You use the term that I want to just take a couple of minutes on, and that is the hard-to-count population.
Yes.
Just open that up a little bit more.
So, statistically, there have been segments of the population deemed as hard to count. And this is based on many years of census taking. And again, one of those hard to count populations is children, 5 and under. And it's hard to understand why that's a hard to count population. But the parents, the grandparents just forget to count the baby that was just born, or the 2-year-old is hanging on their leg while they're taking the count. The other hard-to-count populations are what I call new Americans and immigrants. People where English may be a second language, or there is no English language, so people with different languages. Older adults, especially those classified as isolated, are hard to count because sometimes we forget they are there, or they don't open the door, and they don't have a computer, and it really does take someone that they trust to get that information through. The hard to count also include people in institutions sometimes when the institutions do not take seriously the count factor. So that may be nursing homes, other institutions like prisons and jails and schools with dormitories are responsible for making sure that that count happens. So if you have a child who's in college but not in that home on April 1st, they are counted as part of that university population as opposed to in that home. There are a lot of nuances, if you will, about the census count.
That April 1st count date then is literal.
It is literal.
You're saying that if someone was traveling and there were military service, they're not there, even though you count them as a part of your family.
Right.
You can't include them in the count on that
if they're
day because
not
they're
in
not
that
physically.
Home.
Okay.
She was brought to
I was going to add one other category that I think is historically very difficult are the homeless population.
Good. Yeah. Great.
Absolutely. Okay.
And that's just very difficult. And so oftentimes they'll have people out in the street where they know homeless people sleep or shelters, and they try to get a count that way.
For many of the shelters, I know with families now, they have an extended period that they can be there. But for men especially, it's one day at a time. So if you qualify to be here on April 1st, that does not mean you're going to have been there on March 31st or April 2nd. So I could see what homeless population would be very difficult. What is the community survey as it relates to the census?
So there is a second survey that the Census Bureau does periodically that's called a community survey, and it gets down into the weeds, if you will. Who owns this home? How many homes do you own? They're looking at a deeper community description than just the residence. So it has to do with housing. It does have to do with income, etc. Everyone does not get that. It's based on a percentage of whatever.
So it's a sampling.
It is a sampling.
Okay, because I know that in the prior census it has the estimate of the value of the house, how many
exactly.
rooms, how many...
Exactly. Okay. Okay. This year, it is occurring almost simultaneously to the census, and there's concern that people... Actually, some people have already been asked to fill the community survey, and they're going, I've done the census, I don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And so there's a need to remind and encourage that was the community survey, not the census. So...
Is there any consequence of not having, not participating in this community survey?
I'm not aware of that, but I'm also probably not the person to answer that question. That's a good question. I did not research that.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the other things that we need to focus on is this issue of scams.
Okay.
We've opened up something that includes personal information. I don't mean private. I mean personal information. It's about you. And one of the groups you're going to protect, which is your family, are we? Should we expect some scams to be loosened?
Before you move to that, I was thinking about some of the other reasons that people might be concerned for, even say the number of people living in their homes. That, you know, for many families, other relatives move in and so on, and they're only supposed to have a certain number of people in an apartment, for example, mm-hmm. and they have many more people there. And so it's all the reasons that people feel they're going to get into trouble, that they're concerned about giving an honest answer. And so I think more and more we just have to be sure that people realize that, in fact, it is really just a count, and that no one is going to follow up and do anything negative to them.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then let's, thank you. Let's go back to this issue of scams.
Yes.
Do people become vulnerable to scams?
They do, and I want to address that. One of the many programs that AARP offers has to do with, we have a fraud network. So we do presentations on frauds and scams in the community. So we've been talking about the potential scams around the census since last fall. But people may be contacted by email, by phone, by regular mail with requests that do not match what the Census Bureau does. If you give me money, I'm happy to fill out the census for you. I have your census form. I can send it to you, but I need a $5 payment. I need your bank account information in order to complete the census form for you. And it goes on. So, or we have a job for you working with the Census Bureau, but in order for you to be on the list of potential employees, we need you to do a $50 application
Social Security number.
Social Security number is definitely one of them. So the scammers are really, they are very active and very smart and in a very uncomfortable way in almost anything that comes up. So this is just another opportunity for them to see if they can increase their bank accounts without hard work.
Well, then obviously, for people to stick closely to the information they get that has authoritative elements to it.
That's right.
I'm sure that the first the websites and so forth that are uscensus.gov, or I imagine that's it.
It's easy to determine that the census information you get is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And you are first being asked to do it online, not by someone calling you,
yes.
not by an email, but in an official document.
Yes. And you made the point earlier that there is no request for Social Security.
That's correct.
That's one of the scammers.
Yes. I'd love to get your Social Security number and your bank account.
The one of the things that this is clear is... you sort of boiled it down that the census is focusing on who you are and where you live and how many people live with you.
It's focusing on how many residents are in the United States of America and its territories.
Okay.
And who are they? How old? I mean, are they adults or children or whatever?
So that's broken down after you get into the form.
Yeah.
There's a person who's responding. And then they're going to list the people who live with
them.
That's
correct.
Okay.
That is
okay.
correct.
Well, that's sort of interesting because...
confuse that.
When you look at American history, one of the elements way back in the late 1800s or early 1900s, the census provides information that many families don't realize it's there. You want to know who your ancestors
yes.
are, it's right there.
I have heard so many stories about that. I'm sorry for cutting you off. I've heard so many stories about that lately. Actually, one of the women from the Census Bureau said the reason she got so involved in it was because her family was looking for some ancestral information, and they found it through the census, and that was the last place they had looked. And they were like, wow, there it is. So...
Well, there are communities, I know, for example, in the state of Arkansas, genealogy communities
yes.
are very strong. I don't know everywhere, but I had an aunt who, when she retired as a college professor, when she retired, she chose to research our family.
Yes.
And she went back and found, it would be my great-grandmother when she was 8 years old.
Yes.
And was able to bring that.
Bring it back.
And there's power in that,
sure,
because it also says you are somebody.
Yes,
you know you have
yes.
history and
yes.
Okay, so the big thing that when we talk about the responder, you said that they're going to ask for the head of household.
Yes,
whoever functions in that role.
Yes,
to be the one who responds to this.
Who fills out the form?
Fills out the form. That's
right.
Not a gender determination.
No.
That's not something connected
no.
with a court case that I conceded that you're the.
other faiths to dispel assumptions and myths that I have or may have based on lack of awareness, lack of understanding. And I encourage other people to be involved for that same reason. We are less likely to be suspect of one another if we understand and have respect for that person's belief. Even if it's different from ours, it's still their belief, and the strength of someone's belief is worthy of respect in my mind. So after all these years, I continue to be involved for that reason, and I encourage my family in the same way. Don't be afraid to understand someone else's faith. It's not contagious.
For human beings, there are a lot of different components in what makes us up and all
yeah.
that. And yeah, we spend a lot of time on education, just data. 2 + 2 = 4 and that
right.
kind of thing in our community. But the faith component, I mean, we have wars that have been or and are being fought just on disagreements on faith.
Yes.
And you say, how can you be, especially if an element of your worship has to do with peace.
Right.
How in the world can...
So one of the things that I have found probably most gratifying in my work with the Interfaith Association, every year we do, the last 4 years, an interfaith prayer gathering and potluck. Mm-hmm. And the first year, it was basically on the Golden Rule. And I think I know 17 faith traditions that have some form of do unto others as you wish them to do unto you, or don't do unto others as you would not want them to do unto you, but some form of that. And so it's sort of what we have in common. The second year, it was welcoming the stranger, and we worked on immigration. And again, it's a concept of value that cuts across many, many faith traditions. Third year, it was on caring for the earth, on environment. And again, so we would have, from 9 faith traditions, people would give a reading that came directly from whatever their text would be, or their tradition. And what you come away with is, wow, we have so much in common.
Yeah.
We share so many important values.
And maybe one of the things that we suffer most from is a lack of information and maybe even a lack of appreciation. Because that, when you talk about respect, the scriptures that talk about don't abuse the stranger.
Right.
Pretty foundational and yet ignored and abused all the time.
All the time, right.
And then, of course, the things we know very little about. I say that for myself. There are faith traditions that I know very little about, and I probably need to spend more time learning.
You're welcome to come to our
events.
I think my wife was invited to that potluck. That was recently.
Well, the prayer gathering we have in December, we do an annual, the main event, we call it, in August.
In August.
No, that was something more. Okay, maybe that was a different organization.
But you're on the list now.
Was it? Okay. the other thing, of course, is that in many of these instances, I know that there's a small number of followers in our community. It may be a much larger number somewhere else. And one of the things is just simply opening yourself up to that conversation.
Yes,
and
yes.
How much can actually be shared, even in a short period of time, if you start out with an openness and then a willingness to participate and share. Because we celebrate our differences, and maybe we ought to celebrate our commonalities.
Yes.
He just told me 2 minutes, so I think... that we are at the point that I want to thank you both for coming, sharing information to our listeners. And on behalf of the host of this show, Reverend Dr. Carolyn Pettigrew, I want to say thank you for being on Faith and Family today with our topic, 2020 Census, and with the sponsorship of the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio and the AARP local chapter. I appreciate your sharing information, and I look forward to the next time you're on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are we off? Can we move?
So when does it start?
It starts in the ocean. And when I start my day, look slick, shower. After I shave, thank the Lord for all that God gave. Brush my teeth with the water, the water. Always see me with Fiji bottles of water. In the summer, it's hotter. Take her swimming, you gotta. Make these opposites back up like lobsters. Indigenous warriors, we warrior up for water. Catch California slipping? Never. Let's say imposters, you already know. Cali mountain tops with snow. The Sierras in the Rockies. Snowboarding in the winter, surfing in the summer. Feeling so cocky, I'm riding. We'll hit you with the super soaker. Life's got ups and downs like a roller coaster.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.